Maruri e te whānau, welcome back to the Māori Millionaire Podcast. I'm so excited for today's podcast episode because today we are here with Savvy. If you don't already, you would have already seen her viral TikTok and Instagram series, Bougie on a Budget. But for those who have not, Savvy J is a South Asian content creator. She's an entrepreneur, she's an actress, advocate, most well known for her viral series, Bougie on a Budget. We had Savvy on the podcast last year where we discussed all things money as a content creator. So if you enjoyed today's podcast episode, be sure to take a listen to that one too. It'll be linked in the show notes below. But welcome to the show again, Savvy. I'm so excited for today's chat. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. First of all, I know you're talking about me, but I'm just so proud of you. In a year of seeing you blossom and grow, and the phenomenal growth you have had, and the impact you've had on brown communities, when it comes to money, it's just like I'm just looking at you like a fangirl. I'm just like.
Thank you so much. And you too. I'm literally, was it, when did Bougie on a Budget actually start? Was it
The
around
year
about you?
before. So 2020, I started. I think my first video was June 2023, and
Yep.
then we connected within a year and did our episode came out around last year, literally the same time last year.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, since then it's gained 2.8 million views, 200,000 interactions, with individual videos averaging 150,000 views, 5,000 interactions. Like, this is wild. Why do you think that it's gone so viral?
Look, I just think the series resonates so well in this current economic climate. New Zealand has gone through its second recession now. There is a massive cost of living crisis. Amongst the living costs, food, groceries, everything is just so expensive. And I think people are still, especially Gen Z and millennials, we're still craving a way to enjoy our lives. And I think that this content kind of meets it, right? And I think in terms of why it resonates so well, it doesn't really come from a place of privilege because for me, I came from, my dad was a refugee. Both my parents were refugees when they came to this country. They worked very hard. When we started off, it was a kind of a low-income household that changed as we grew up. But we had to learn a lot of tips on how to enjoy our lives with less, And I think on top of that, I do have my degree in finance. I do have a background in finance, so I can really talk about what is actually saving money. And I bring on other public figures onto the series. Like a lot of you would have seen a lot of well-known faces on the series, and they're willing to share their vulnerability and their kind of tips as well. And I think when you see someone who's in a really good position, like these people I bring on, some of them are they're very wealthy. And the fact that they're willing to share this and take away the shame and stigma around saving, I think that's amazing. I also think that, it doesn't just cover one topic. It covers home and living, fashion, beauty, dining. I haven't gotten onto family. I really want to start doing family. I just don't have kids myself. But I think it's just practical, obvious tips. There's also a bit of comedy in there. It's very relatable and it's not, I try to keep everything under 20, $30, So anyone at the end of the week or the end of the month can genuinely enjoy it. I don't think about, oh, can the average person afford it? I'm like, can the person who is on wins save for a month if they're careful and enjoy this sort of thing? So I really try to appeal to the people who need this the most.
I love this so much, and it's super duper relatable when you talk about your upbringing, because that's literally mine as well. And being able to find ways to maximize your quality of life without necessarily having to spend so much money. And then also when it comes to those wealthy individuals, something that I've realized in my journey is a lot of them are super, super savvy when it comes to money. Growing up, I always thought that rich people just, spent all of their money. And there are some people that do that, but a lot of them are very mindful about, how they utilize what they actually have. So I really love that you're, bringing attention to this. What is the bougiest thing that you've done on a budget?
Do you want one thing? Because I've put a whole list for your audience that I think they would really appreciate.
Oh my gosh, spill the
Yeah,
tea,
but
like.
I will fire through them. These are my favorite things. My number one is going on a coffee or tea date with your girlfriends or mates, but somewhere really fancy. So you can go to a really upscale restaurant, or you can go to hotel lobbies, and you can just have a $5 coffee and get to still experience that. A lot of those places are so fancy and so nice that they sometimes put some free snacks snacks on the table as well. All you have to do is, dress nicely and head out. And it's like you're getting the experience, but have your dinner at home, go use the setting to have a coffee or like a Diet Coke. I don't drink. So, like, something like that. I've done that so many times. So I look, oh, Sabi's having this great life, all these fancy places. I've spent like under $10, That is my number one tip. Another really good one is Uber One has like movie tickets on there. I do think like a Netflix night at home is great, but once in a while going to the movies, always booking at the Newmarket Event Cinemas because you can get tickets for $12.50 with unlimited refills. Same thing with Silky Otter in I think there's Ōraki and Ponsonby on a particular night. I think it's Tuesday or Monday. Around $15 tickets, unlimited refills again. Something that's like, an entire experience for under $20.
That is so good.
Really great date idea, great girlfriend hangout. Auckland Art Gallery is completely free. You can grab a coffee and then you could also walk around the Domain and visit the Domain Winter Gardens. If you are going to go thrift shopping, always go in affluent suburbs, Ponsonby, Remuera, that you don't really care. Like, I've literally bought designer items like Forever New, Country Road. It would be in other stores in particular suburbs for like 40, $50. In Remuera, it's like $10, $20. I just don't think they're just turning over so much they don't really care. If you are going for dates or anything special, always book through First Table. Never ever book a dinner like without First Table or Grab One. Or I think is there another one now instead of First Table?
I don't know.
I think there's another one that's kind of come out that's really good. Another great thing is if you do want to have some high-end groceries, after 3 p.m. on any day, Farro is so expensive, but all their deli items and all their breads go for like half to one third of the price, which is still cheaper or the same price as buying at Countdown, but the freshness level is so much more. So I recommend it's very much a hit and miss, but I've got an amazing stuff. I remember I got like an oyster tray for $10. Like 12 oysters. So
Wow.
like, and then I took that home and made like a little mignonette. I had the
Okay.
ingredients at home. A really good gift idea is if you need to, you've got a friend's birthday coming up, you can't afford something expensive, you can buy like little boxes from a drop shipping site, right? Like little cake or little tin boxes. And at Countdown, you can get 10, 12 macaroons for $13.
Oh my
So I
God.
think that's such a great idea of like giving, you could, take it out of the tray and put it into a nice box. And if you're having like a little party, you could put one in each of the little boxes as like a favor instead of having to spend for like an expensive goodie bag. I also recommend like doing cheese boards at home. You'd be surprised if you just go on YouTube how to just place the cheese and the salami and get like a breadstick. You could do such a beautiful little board, I would say for anywhere between $10 and $30. And I think there's no shame in asking everyone to pitch in at a certain age, like if you're all at uni, you all pitch in. There's nothing wrong with that. And also, if you can't afford an expensive present for someone, if you wrap it very beautifully, do a handwritten card, and then add a wax seal to it. It could even be a $5 item. The wax seal, I think my whole wax seal set from a drop shipping site. I'm not going to name the drop shipping site. I don't like buying off those places, but it is the same as Amazon or Kmart, right? But like if you the wax seal set that I paid for was $13 and it's still going. I haven't even had to buy new wax. Just little things like that just make such a difference. And I think also like shopping at reduced to clear if you're bulk buying or shopping for like a birthday party or something or for an event. But I would say out of all of that, my favorite one is getting a coffee in a hotel lobby, like the hotel lobby restaurants. I've never seen a more like bougie elevated experience.
I'm gonna do that. That sounds so fun.
Yeah, the only issue with hotel lobbies is like parking. Because you've got to pay for parking. So if you are busing in or traveling like before or after work, or going in for a meeting, that's a great time to just stop at your closest hotel and then just go up to there. Yeah, that's
Auckland
my favorite.
parking is absolutely crazy. You need to do a bougie on a budget for like how do we park in Auckland for free or something like this. Oh my gosh,
I
that's
don't think that's possible. I think honestly, I just use the AT car park app. A lot of carpooling between me and my flatmates. We try carpool. In the city, it's actually like cheaper to just Uber for me. It's like $13 each way, but it's like $25 an hour. So
That's
yeah,
what I've done.
it's actually scary how much parking is.
It's ridiculous. Why do you think it's so important for brown community specifically to understand that being good with your money doesn't actually mean you have to, like sacrifice on having fun or enjoying your life?
When you say brown communities, are you talking about like South Asian and like Māori Pacifica, like all of us? I can't, because I
Yeah,
think we have
all.
very similar cultural
Yeah.
values, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of similarities. Look, I think in like, I can only talk for the South Asian
Yeah.
community, but you can just chime in and tell me if you resonate at all. I think in the particularly the South Asian community, we're kind of brought up with like this pressure to get an education, earn well, then you grow your wealth. And it's not necessarily about enjoying life, it's about accomplishing things and being successful. And I think that was kind of shaped from the fact that our parents came here as immigrants and were in survival mode. Same thing that, Māori or a lot of brown communities have been, all of us have pretty much been colonized. And then we had to fight our way up, and we probably both had the same level of, lack of any sort of resources, and were treated a certain way in society. So we had to work extra hard to get out of that cycle of or poverty cycle or survival cycle. So our parents were really focused on security, stability, and financial success, not necessarily enjoyment, because they never got to enjoy their lives. They had to fight so hard and work so hard for us. So it's also understanding why there is that mentality. For me, I think it's like I've become really okay with spending on things that are like holidays, hobbies, personal growth, even if it doesn't bring a financial return. And I think that kind of comes from, looking at all the South Asian community that I grew up with, not necessarily my cousins. I think I'm very blessed with this epic family, and epic cousins and aunties who are very progressive, and all married later on in life. It was great. But when I've looked at that kind of the South Asian people I went to uni with specifically, and I here and there I have the, I had a few South Asian friends. I think there's like this big thing of like chasing these boxes, which is like education, then career growth, marriage, kids, house, investment properties, and then like promotions. And it's just like this ladder of constantly going up and being successful and always hustling. And it's not really ever stopping to ask, like, is any of this making me happy? Because I think there's this thing of like academic and career excellence is important, but it doesn't guarantee happiness at all. And I'd say a lot of my friends who do earn a lot of money and do all these things, like, yeah, they've got like a couple of great designer things, but I'll tell you now, I wouldn't say they're friends. We'll say acquaintances from uni now, right? It's been a while since we've been friends. I wouldn't say a lot of them are happy at all. They might be traveling and having this glamorous life and getting their 2 week holiday, but the level of actual happiness, I don't see it. So I think, there's this also in my particular culture, there's this culture of quiet competition. I don't know if you have that in your culture.
Quiet competition, like, what do you mean by that?
Like you're all kind of comparing your careers and lifestyles and timelines, and then it's kind of like, oh, if you get that, I have to get that kind of a thing. And it's like, and it also shows up in different ways. It can show up in like jealousy, tall poppy, imposter syndrome, gossip. And I think that kind of comes from my particular community. I don't know if you kind of have that
Yeah,
in
I think that
yours.
definitely like resonates like as a widespread thing. I'm not necessarily like within my family, but I think the tall poppy syndrome is like a huge thing. Just, generally speaking in New Zealand, I think compared to other countries, we have it like far worse, in terms of the tall
And that
poppy.
is quiet competition, because they're like, they don't understand how you could have gotten out of your situation and become so successful when you came from the same place and look the same.
That hits harder.
And I think like, like a really good example as well is like constantly trying to compare yourselves to others or come across a certain way as well. Like, so for example, wearing designer clothing, doing fancy travel, experiences, like, I don't know, flying first class or staying in an all-inclusive resort, like all those sorts of things, unless you can really afford it. I don't think like doing that for the sake of like coming across a certain way. And I have met someone who was just like that, while pushing like, oh, financial independence and financial mindset, but doing all those things, even though they couldn't afford it, apparently. It's just like, it's everyone's on their own financial path, right? And I think there's like we also have to understand everyone comes from like different levels of privilege, support, financial background, and you just can't compare your timeline. And as soon as you learn that whole thing of I can't compare my timeline, I'm on my own journey, I have my own goals, I have my own happiness that I want to prioritize. And depending what that is, for some people it might be, yeah, I want to become a CEO of a company. For others, it might be like you want to write a book. For me, I want to have like Bougie on a Budget grow. I want to be able to remotely work overseas and live a pretty chill life, you know, while working. So it's just like, yeah, just really understanding what you want. And that's when real peace comes from knowing what you value financially. And that might be putting money into things that other people may not understand brings a financial return, but not into dumb things, you know? Yeah, like a car or anything. I'm talking more about experiences, your hobbies. You know, for you might want to put in some money into your personal brand. People might not understand that, like, oh, why haven't you used that money for a house or something, you know?
No, that resonates so much. And I was actually just reading in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Bleep
A bleep.
around, beyond a certain point, increasing your income and, having more financial prosperity doesn't actually correlate with being happier, like beyond a certain point. Like obviously if you're, homeless, getting $10,000 will significantly improve your happiness levels. But, there's a point in which it doesn't. So I guess, this is so important to share because what you're doing with Bougie on a Budget, because you're kind of sharing that it doesn't really, you can use the money that you have so much smarter and use the money that you have to buy the things that actually help you to feel more fulfilled or help improve your happiness levels. And it's not all about working and hustling and grinding and things like that. So that resonates so much and it's so relatable. For me and my journey also, I've spent a lot of time, focusing on productivity and just chasing that next goal. And, something I've been really reminded of lately is like actually like what are you actually working towards? And like if you're not having the time and the capacity to like actually enjoy your life, then what's it all for?
And
So
this is something me and you can really relate to, is that we've both been on this very similar like health and wellness weight loss journey together, but that's not seen as productive because it's not money making, you know? So we're spending all this time to improve our health and well-being and, you know, eat better, do better for ourselves. It is actually more productive for our bodies. But you know, people will be like, oh, why are you so obsessed with this? You should be working. That's more, and I think in our both of our cultures, like exercising, health, eating healthy, it's not a priority at all, you know?
And I, look at that as like such a privilege because I look up the line, like in my family, where other people haven't had the space to do that, whether it's like going on an hour's walk or something where other people in my family have had to kind of work and they've had to sacrifice their health in order to provide, we get to use that time to focus on us and we get to be cycle breakers. We get to, change things for generations to come, which is a huge privilege. And I, I love this for us to be able to do. One of the things you spoke about was asking other people to pitch in when you're doing things. And something I'm really big on is being able to like communicate your boundaries and not just kind of accept like, oh, this kind of happens and I'm just going to kind of go along with it. I think that the more that we're able to communicate our boundaries, like it actually calls other people forward to communicate theirs also. Do you have any tips for
Oh my
those listening
goodness.
in about how you practice communication around your financial boundaries? I know, like, for example, in Maori culture, there's a huge expectation to give, and sometimes I see people giving to their own detriment. And I actually speak about this in my book where if it's not sustainable to like just give. And so if we're able to like actually communicate better about this, we can actually give more in the long term if we like set ourselves up, firstly, and then we can focus on giving more, in the long term. Do you have any tips on communicating boundaries? Like how do you navigate this?
Look, I think as women, we're usually not very vocal, especially of women of color, we're even more quiet about what we really want. And I agree with you, just kind of go along with the flow. And look, I have written stuff on like, when to buy a home, relationships, marriage, different values and friendships and relationships. And I want to go over all that, but talking exactly about what you're just saying about being generous, what I would call being generous to a fault. And I have been told by somebody, I was told by Chenille Lal, actually. He was like, I was told by Chenille Lal, they said that, I'm very generous to a fault. And it was, they're not the first person to say that to me, but it very much like rang alarm bells in me that I do go above and beyond in like presents, giving gifts, shouting people. And for my own financial detriment, I kind of had to take a step back from being excessively generous and kind of communicating like, oh, here and there, of course, I will shout people, but, would I can't afford to shout, or someone has shouted me a few times, I'll be like, oh, is it okay if we just go 50-50? I'm just like in a position right now that I've paid for X and X and I can't. Sometimes my income's very volatile. There are months that I earn like nothing, and then there'll be months that I earn so much that like, the years, you already know, as someone who's self-employed. So if there's people's birthdays during that time, I always say like, hey, is it okay if I just get you something small? We do this small thing. And then when it comes around to Christmas, which is when I am Mrs. Claus. And that's when all, that's because I do the sales, budget and budget content. That's the months that it takes off for me. I'm like, I can do something then, So being very clear that, especially if people are doing like, those fancy sit down dinners for their birthdays, which everyone at my age is, I'll just say like, hey, I won't be able to make this, but could we do something tinier? Because a lot of times it's like, 100 to like $200 a person sometimes, so that's one thing. I do kind of want to go into these boundaries that I think are really important, especially for women, single women as well, even women in relationships. Firstly is like on buying like a house. I think that we're kind of pressured after we finish uni to get a job and immediately buy a house, and that kind of actually just makes you stuck. Because you have to pay your mortgage, and especially nowadays, the rent is not going to, even if you put someone into the rental, it's not going to cover. You're going to have to make a lot of gap payments. You don't have a lot of freedom. And I think after, when you get a job, you should actually decide what do you really want to do with your career and life before you even decide where you want to buy a house as well, And then do you want to be, for me, if I had to pay a mortgage, I probably have to stick to being here for at least a year. Right, and stay in the house and pay the rent or whatever. And I think for me, I have to decide when is that right time, because right now I want to do like a lot of remote working and traveling, right? And I'm not willing to sacrifice travel, hobbies, or like investing into my business right now. And I think the ROI, and I would say the same to you, putting into our business is significantly higher than what we're going to make from an investment property, even if we were paying, losing the amount of rent that we're paying every week. That's my assumption right now. Once it takes off, then it's a very quick thing. So, it's, people are going to be like, oh, are you going to buy a house? Are you going to buy a house? When are you going to buy a house? Especially because I've just hit like over 30 now. That's a question that I don't get asked, but I know in brown communities that might be asked. So just being clear, like what you want with your life, like, oh, that doesn't suit me right now. I'm definitely saving for a house, and I am also saving, but I will buy it when the time is right. I think on marriage and relationships as well, I think that's another big one that we're pushed in our communities, which is like, you need to marry because it's time to settle down. And it's almost like it's like a financial convenience. Like two households combining makes things better. But I think, marriage should happen when it feels right. And I think for women as well, we're kind of taught like, I was definitely taught this in my family, but like the men are really the providers, and I think there's nothing wrong with it. If you want to provide a man, great. I would personally prefer like a provider man
Me
to an
too.
extent, at least a protector. I can provide a lot myself too, but I think at the same time, while you can want a provider, you should not rely on a provider. You should be able to have your own financial freedom, regardless of the relationship, and not put yourself in a position, which happens where you completely rely on them. You put your career back, and then if you're in an uncomfortable position in your situation, you have to stay because of your financial situation. I think that's something like being very clear for me, that I have had men approach me. They're like, "I'll take care of you. You can stay at home." I'm like, cool, I would like you to take care of me, but I don't want to stay at home. I want to work. I want to have my own career. I can also, I get everything for free. I can take you on holidays. We get the restaurants. Anything we want for the house, I can probably get. So for me, like whatever you're providing shouldn't also like take over my goals either. And then there's the opposite of provider, right? There's also the 50-50 culture, which I don't think is a huge thing in our cultures, but it could be becoming a bit more prominent. Like I was surprised that one of my South Asian friends said that she was in this situation herself. But you know, people need to be remember that even though you're earning 50-50, when it comes to a woman's emotional and domestic labor, especially when children are involved, it is never 50-50. They're
No.
going to work, then they're coming home, they're cleaning, they're cooking, they're taking care of the children. That is two jobs right there.
Yep.
And they're also taking care of, you know, I'm not going to say like this is not my dad or the men that I know. Like my friends' boyfriends who come over, they even put my plates in the dishwasher for me sometimes, you know, and my dad loves cleaning. But you know, a lot of times there is this expectation that women have the full, you know, domestic and child labor, and they compare that to how the mums were. And we're also comparing ourselves to how our mums were, and we're like, oh, we need to do this, we need to do this. And you know, I will say that I have noticed this is becoming a massive issue. It's mainly our generations that are now getting affected by this because the women are agreeing to it. They're like, oh, you know, I'm earning now too, equality, feminism. And when it comes to the relationship, they're not actually, they realize later on, oh, I don't want to be doing all this. I don't want to be working and I'm so exhausted. And I can say this, I don't think my friends would mind. Quite a few of my friends are going through divorce for this exact reason. And a few of them actually earned more, put more of a deposit into the house, put way more money into the relationship, funded holidays, you know, did nicer things for their partner while carrying the domestic and emotional and child labor. I think you need to be very clear on what type of partner you want up front, not just accept what comes to you. And then again, that also applies to friendships as well. I think, you know, you need to have friends who have similar financial goals. If my friends are out partying and having fancy dinners and wanting to do that, I can't do that with them. Well, I mean, I don't party, but you know, luckily through my job, I do get invited to a lot of stuff, so I use that as a way to save money. But I want friends that have very similar financial goals, which is to improve their lives, to improve their personal brand, to build their career, and to be financially responsible with their money. I've never gone shopping. I've never really gone shopping in a designer store. I did go to the Coach outlet once, but you know, I'm not going to go and like drop these huge amounts of money on like designer clothes and stuff. And you know, I wouldn't also enjoy someone who that's what their whole personality is about. And I think, you know, finding someone who also wants to spend on the same things as you, like finding a friend who wants to go to the gym, who maybe wants to do a cold plunge and sauna with you, and so that you can pitch in and do those things together versus having to go out to please a friend that wants to go out drinking and doing something that you don't want to spend your money on, you know, finding something you both like. The only exception is this when it's someone's birthday. I'm like, that's the one day I will do whatever you want, you know? And I think another big one, I don't know if you, surely you have found this, though I feel like we don't, I don't know how much you have this, but do you find like men give you lots of unsolicited advice?
Oh, I feel like people in general do. Like, it's so funny whenever I
Even
do
women?
Women too. Like, whenever I do a vlog of like, and I'm really mindful about like what I put in it, but like, especially with like fitness, and then people are just like, oh my gosh, you should do da 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 da. And like, sometimes it's helpful. Sometimes I'll ask, but like, a lot of the time I won't. And it's like, oh my gosh, like, I didn't ask.
Yeah, that's so frustrating because it's like you're doing your own research into this. But have you ever noticed it with like how you're running your page, your financial advice? Have you had people like give you advice on like unsolicited kind of advice?
Definitely.
Yeah, so what I found a lot in my culture, especially like brown men, it's just like a brown man thing. I don't know, South Asian men specifically, they give so much like unnecessary like financial advice, you know, that I never asked for. I'm like, I have a degree in finance, you know? Like I have two businesses now. Like I've been working for myself for over 7 years in the same business, you know? And I think like an example is like last year this mortgage advisor was like, "Oh, like let me look over your finances. Like let me connect to your accountant. Like you should be buying a property right now." And I was like very clear to them and I put this boundary down. I was like, "Look, like I want to invest into my business. I also, you know, have X and X kind of goals that I have. And also me and my dad are looking to buy land in Sri Lanka. That's how I want to spend my money." And you know, he kept like just like pushing this concept on me. And I'm like, I'm just not interested in it, you know? And it's just like I had to just kind of take it as, hey, you know, I have this background, this is what I want. Then, you know, if I really want advice, I'll go to like my dad. I've got my accountant and I've also got a financial mentor that literally owns like half the apartment building across Sofitel. Like that's the people I'm going to go to for advice. And I think it's just being like respectful over avoid explaining like how you want to live your life, and then like kind of sticking to your trusted circle without engaging in any sort of debate with these men. I think it's maybe it's just more for me because I don't know, maybe it's like a South Asian thing, but men will see what I'm doing. They're like, oh, but why haven't you done this? Why haven't you expanded into Sydney? I was like, because I don't want to. Like, so I think that's a really big one for women that will get like a lot of, what's it called? Like, mansplaining.
No, I love this conversation so much. What are like some of the things that you do inside your life, to balance being smart with money while still enjoying your life?
One would be clearly having like a monthly budget, and kind of putting side expenses and buffers to enjoy, at the moment I have some hobbies that are, I'm trying to get my motorbike license. I also go to the rifle range. It's too rainy now, but I do stand up paddle boarding. And then, I do really like the whole gym and walk and matcha thing. So keeping about a little bit of money aside for that. Those are actually not, the motorbike's quite an expensive thing to pick up, but like rifle range is very cheap, so I can put that into a weekly budget. I also have side hustles on top of working. So my income goes towards like my expenses. And then if I want anything to like enjoy hobby-wise, travel-wise, I have like which we talked about last year, I do like furniture flipping. And I really, really ramp it up at the end of the year when I want to buy gifts, when I want to travel, if there's something I want to buy for myself. I also track all my monthly spending so I avoid overspending and reduce the stress of it. I have health insurance as well, so all my medical costs are covered so that, you don't have to budget too much for that. You just pay your health insurance and you kind of sort it with that particular thing. For my age, it's really important. I think when you're younger, health insurance isn't important. 27 and over, you need to have health insurance. I just got diagnosed with PCOS. I'm so lucky that I just transferred over to like Southern Cross and now my health is covered. And I'm saying this is so important because you need good health to enjoy your life.
I preach insurance, like, love it.
When my money comes in as well, I immediately allocate it. So it goes to like rent bills, then variable expenses like food, my tax and GST is paid, student loan payments, pay any contractors or like owing amounts. And then I put it towards my financial goals, and then I keep some for my enjoyment as well. So when you're doing that, you actually feel really good about spending your money. You're like, oh, I've done everything right. I'm not like, this is not like, I'm not going to feel
Guilty.
regret afterwards. I also think having really clear financial goals, you need to really sit down and think like, the kind of plan that I have, and you can chime in on this, is like everyone needs to start with an emergency fund, then have a rainy day fund. They need to be on top of their IRD and GST payments. They need to have avoid like, any debt or credit card unless you're very responsible and use the credit card to, buy for air points or whatever. And then, what are your long-term goals? For me, the next few things is I would like to upgrade my car, which isn't, it's a depreciating asset, but also like saving for a house. And the car, I've got a decent car at the moment, but eventually I'd like something nicer, but probably after getting a property or something, so there's that. And then I also do weekly check-ins. Every week I check my finances. I also see how much of my budget I have saved. And this is a really, really great tip. I take all, like, say, for example, someone shouted me a coffee and I thought I would have to spend $5. I put that $5 into Sharesies immediately and I put it into investing. So that money is not to then go and enjoy even more. It's like the universe giving you this blessing of saving money. And I think you should immediately put that particular money into investing. So every week, maybe I'll save $20. Sometimes I'll save $200 because I saved for something and then a brand reached out and they're like, do you want this? I'm like, yes. And then I put that money because I was expecting to spend it. And I also track everything I want to buy. I think people, we live in this world where capitalism and materialism is consistently pushed on us in social media. And you're told you need this and this, you need to buy this and this. I have like a tiered Excel sheet. Like even like updating my wardrobe is in 20 phases of what are the essentials, what are the things I need, and I've broken it down. And then I wait and buy it either on sale or secondhand. So I'll go try it on store and wait for it to come secondhand on designer wardrobe. And I think, that way, if I go shopping, I'm never going to be like just randomly, but I don't know if I had this issue when I was younger. We'd go to like DreSmart or something, just like buy all this stuff that we don't need. Now I have this clear list, and unless it's that, I will not buy. I've never bought anything that's not on that list in like the last 3, 4 years. I put together this buying Excel sheet. Which is like very, very life changing.
Oh my gosh, I love these so much. Having like, oh my gosh, I love that one about having, someone buying something and then actually using that money, because that's so true. So many people, you'll have all of these blessings come into your life and then you just end up wasting it on something else. I'm definitely going to implement that
And
one.
I'm gonna tell you how cheap I am. Like, you know how we do BP, go to BP and there's like save 6 cents, right? Sometimes I'll get an extra $1.50 there or $1.87. Whatever my savings are, I immediately go into Sharesies and put it in. I
I
know it's
love
such a little
this.
amount,
Yeah, but it
but
adds
if you did
up.
that every week, that's like $100.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
That
know?
is
So
so, oh my gosh, I love this so much. So, having studied business and finance at university, what are some of the key learnings that you wish more of our community understood about money?
I think keeping your budget on an Excel sheet. I think my whole degree was like about Excel. I think actually like learning the basics of Excel and learning how to keep all your money in Excel, I think is such a big thing. You can even learn that course online for free, right? For Google Sheets. I'm surprised how many women I know that do not know how to use Excel at all, even for like contact management or anything. It's just an amazing tool that you will learn at uni and you can learn it for free. I can't believe I spent so much money on a degree for that. Understanding how the economy works, how money moves, accounting basics, financial planning, understanding insurance. You just understand that these are key things that you need to understand in life so that the world doesn't own you. You own your life. Money doesn't own you. Money works for you. You don't work for the money. And I think, it also taught, because I did business and finance together and I did international business, you also learn to run how to run a business as well. But these are all courses that you can also do for free. So I do have a solid overview of how like money and business structures work, which prepares me kind of for like the workforce and like, being street smart, I guess, or life smart. It also I think it also taught me so much about like ROI, understanding your return on investment. And I think, whatever you might be taught, the reality is like how much ROI is your portfolio going to be if you do go into investment property, right? What's your return? Is it 5%? Is it like between 10 and 12%? Can you also achieve that with a much less amount, with much less risk in a stock market? How much would your ROI be on a business? We already know it's like 500%, 1000%. People don't realize that, right? The return on your business is so high if you put the money in and do things to invest in your business. So, understanding all of that, I would say like my degree was useful for my life. I actually will say this right now. I do not think everybody needs a degree. I think if you want to be a lawyer, doctor, great. I honestly think, higher education is not necessary depending on what kind of workforce you want to go into. And in this particular economy, being a student for 4 years versus building that 4 years work experience. So when I was at uni, I was actually working 30, 40 hours a week on top of studying. I did night classes and I worked all day and I made it work, So I already went in. I was already ready for the workforce to go into a team leader position at the end of 4 years, 3 years, 3, 4 years of my degree,
100%.
keeping that in mind.
I love that so much. And one of the best things that I did was actually like pausing on uni. Everyone puts this,
Yes.
so many people put a put so much pressure on you to like study, and so many people ask me like, when are you going to finish your law degree? When are you going to do this? And like, what a waste, and da 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 da. And it's like, actually, like, I've invested so much money and time and energy into building my business, and I think that it's so important to just, as you were saying,
Don't bother finishing it if it doesn't serve you right now, because
yeah.
I took multiple pauses from my finance degree to go pursue acting, but I felt that pressure from my parents to finish my degree. So I put my acting career to a side, and I think that's one of my biggest regrets in life. So if really great opportunity has come your way,
Take it.
which is more than you'd ever get if you finished your law degree and did your first year as a grad,
And it's
take
like
it.
now, like, my business makes more than what I would have made if I had have stayed in law and was like doing like a, junior job in law. And it's like, this is gonna grow so much more than doing that. So I just really believe in people actually just doing what they think is best and not listening to all of these other people. Like, if they're not living the life that you want, then like, don't take advice from them.
But it's also this: you can start a degree, realize it's not for you, and change.
And that's so much better than like finishing a degree and like racking up all the student loan debt for something that you don't even, really want to do, and you just did because adults in
Feels.
life, were told you to do it. I have one final question that I wanted to ask you, and this was around, where would you recommend someone that's wanting to do better with their finances go and actually learn so that they can, achieve their financial goals?
There's this really mean girl called Multi-Millionaire that you should check out. She's like so up herself. And that's the page you should. No, I do want to talk about what you're doing in a second, but we're going to start with like the easiest to the most expensive, right? Books. Get your best budgeting, mindset, managing books. You can go to the library for free. Audible and Kindle have pretty good deals, or you can also buy them secondhand. Some of my favorite is the Total Money Makeover. And especially for brown communities, I think like the rich dad, poor dad mentality is a really good one.
Love it.
Richest Man in Bob Babylon. Look at a lot of mindset books. Also look at how to, make over your money as well, what to do with your money as well. I really like the 4-hour work week as well, which is like a comparison between time and money. And I think I really applied that to my life. Then I would look for free financial advice in your community. So IRD offers GST business and tax courses. Your banks and Kiwi Bank run a lot of free courses. I'd just be mindful of going to like property investment companies and stuff are like, learn how to make money or whatever. And they put these courses together. It's always to try and sell or push people into like, buying their product. So just be mindful of that. But there are some great free courses out there. Follow some great financial creators. You, obviously. My other favorite ones are Frances Cook's Girls That Invest. And recently, I don't know if you've seen Alice Taylor Eats.
No.
Oh, she's amazing. She does focus on the cost of living crisis, and she makes budget-friendly recipies. I'd also say looking into investing or business courses. So a course like what you, Frances, and Girls That Invest, Friends That Invest, it's
Yes,
called
friends
Friends
that
That Invest,
invest.
is really good. I would say a course like, before you even think of investing, you really need to think about your everyday finances and a course like yours. And you have a course in Te Reo Māori as well, right?
No, not in Te Reo Māori. I'm currently on I'm putting people on a wait list at the moment. We're doing a launch soon, but it's in English.
Okay, cool. Maybe you can just cut that part out. We won't
You're
talk
all
about
good.
that. Okay, cool. We'll start that point again. So take investing or business courses over having to do like a degree. I think some of the courses that I've seen in the New Zealand market, Girls That Invest does investing. Frances Cooks does like, money, property, and investing as well. But I think like the courses that you offer, I think you would really break it down in a really easy way for people to understand. So instead of them having to read all these books and do all these things, I do think if you have the money to put into a course, it's really worth it. And I have taken some courses as well. I really want to take yours at some point when I just it would be good to even have a refresh, even at my age, it's always nice to have a refresh and get a different perspective. I think another thing is, when you're thinking about anything from investments to mortgage insurance, I do think it's very important that you see a broker or advisor. But be mindful that when you're choosing these people, that you choose someone who has like minimum 15 years experience in the field. This is my advice. Try and wait for an appointment with a senior person. Don't just take the whoever's at the bottom. Not that, those people deserve experience too, but you can specifically ask, right? Like I'll say, I want an appointment with the head stylist. Well, why are you doing that for your hair, but you're not doing it for your finances, And then preferably someone who's trustworthy. Like I've noticed, and I'm sure you have as well, I think what resonates so well about you and Frances and those kind of girls is you're not like this flashy finance bro that's like coming out of like, some car, like flexing their like muscles and sleeves and like picked up and like, hey guys, like you need to do this with your money. And like, I have like five investment properties, but you don't actually know what their gross yield is, you don't actually know if they're even able to afford those houses or has their mum pitched in. Like you have no idea, right? So I think choosing someone that has a proven track record, solid portfolio, and real results, and not just also choosing someone, especially in our communities, we're like, oh, hire your cousin, oh, my uncle does it, like go check him out. And then you choose someone just because they're charming and likable. That's not a reason, at all. And I think, yeah, be very selective about the financial advice that you absorb. What I mean by that is avoid this whole wealth mindset influencers, who focus on like aesthetics or hustle culture. And without the real knowledge, and not everything is about grinding 24/7. Like you've said, you've taken a balance between your business and your health. And sometimes the smartest move is to step back, enjoy your life, and listen only to the people that really kind of resonate with your goals. And I'd leave that as one more tip, is that if you see someone doing really well around you, Ask them. You never know if they have time. Obviously try and bring value back to them. Like, for example, I think in the last week I messaged, I don't know if you know Top Flight Investor. So I messaged him like, oh, I've got some spare money, like what should I put it in? And he just said, like, this is not advice, but this is what I'm putting it in. I was like, oh, I'll just copy you. And then one of my friends in the US, she's also like a dual citizen here, she's PR, she puts a lot of money into AI, like AI stocks. And then she's like, oh, I made X and X on this much. I was like, okay, well, what did you put it in? And then she was so transparent. She sent me her portfolio, and I was like, her name's Dara. I was like, wow, there are some people who would be just willing to just give you, like, same as you and me, right? Like, we're so happy if people DM us to refer them to resources, let them know what we're doing, just to help out, because it also gives them that confidence, or someone else is doing it, I should do it too. So ask the people around you who are doing well. When you have some spare money, what should I do with it? What would they do with the spare money,
Oh my gosh, Savvy, you are absolutely incredible. Thank you so much. Like, all of these tips, I'm gonna be listening to this episode, taking more notes as we're going. It's been such
I think you're the guru here. I think I was hoping you would say more so I could learn something from you from this episode.
Honestly, I love like being able to interview people and just learn so much from everyone and their different experiences and the different angles that they're coming at it from. And I just really value your time today and being able to share all of this with us. Like, so grateful for that. And big mihi to you for your time and for the wisdom that you've shared with not only me but with everyone who's listening to today's podcast episode. I am so grateful for you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much. And one more thing is, I'm so excited for your book. To everybody, get her book. That could be a really great book to start with. I personally will be reading it as well. I'm actually waiting for my copy. Give that book a read. I think, what you're doing, how you, communicate financial knowledge is so accessible and understandable. And it comes from someone who has, like you said, come from a low income, different lifestyle, and has, like, just made money work for them. I think if anyone should be learning, it should definitely be from someone like you.
Thank you so much, Sebi. Really appreciate you, and can't wait maybe for our third episode next year.
Yes, once a year, girl.